But let's move to the report backs in terms of my groups here, but where are we here? Perhaps I could turn first to Holly, if you're...
Thank you, Paul. We will probably save some time in our discussion here because we didn't have too many answers to share. Rather, we started our session with a conceptual issue, that being, to what extent do we believe the revenue recognition standard should have as its objective the ability to cover revenue recognition across industries rather than within industries? Is it really possible to write a standard that is general enough that can embrace revenue for the diverse business models that exist while still provide enough guidance so that the user could understand the output from the standard? And in our discussions, I think we kind of settled on the fact that it is possible to have a very principle-based revenue recognition standard, but that alongside of that, we need to be quite proactive in providing guidance. And so part of our discussion came about in that while there's been some general guidance provided, it would be worthwhile to reach out to industries and in particular companies within industries to develop very specific examples of how the nuances of the standards would play out. And that way, by providing those very detailed analyses, you would actually be modeling what might happen with the implementation of the standard that would then get to the very questions that were asked of the breakout sessions. And that is, you know, in what particular jurisdictions, in what particular industries would you find some potential barriers to the standard being implemented? We didn't identify really any jurisdictions or industries because we ourselves maybe didn't have the details available to us to kind of model what would happen. That being said, we did spend some time then with other questions, that being, you know, what are the costs and benefits of the standard? And I think if we take a look at what the costs, we kind of put them into two broad buckets, kind of the explicit costs. Are there concerns that the standard would require potentially dual sets of reporting or multiple sets of reporting beyond what already currently exists in companies' records? So that cost, of course, can't be ignored because it does impose costs not only on the company but on the auditors as they try to attest to the output on the financial statements. There's also the implicit costs that might occur if a company were to change its operating strategies or its compensation structures in a way that they could best take advantage of some of the options or some of the nuances of the new standard. And again, these costs, both explicit and implicit, potentially could be identified better through some modeling or some field exercises to see how the standard was being employed. In terms of benefits, obviously the benefit would result in, you know, better insights into companies' revenue practices and its strategy, in particular the reporting of the idea of uncollectible accounts, what we used to call bad debt expense, more directly with the revenues, and then separately kind of some of the possibility for obligations that could not be performed. So that idea of a benefit of reporting definitely plays out, and I think can find use in that. But overall, I think that our conversation was very much intertwined with the outreach and the education. The idea that while there's been many meetings and many discussions on a very broad level conceptually, now's the time to put into play very detailed programs of implementation and analysis so that we could identify in a proactive way some of the areas of concern.
Thank you. Any questions of Holly?
Or my group members?
All right, well then let's turn to Jamie.
Great. You know, the two topics, first, were there specific concerns or other areas that should be added to the board's evaluation? I guess I'd start by saying, you know, many of the constituents in our group have followed the board's activities, and you know, we think the board has done an excellent job educating and making themselves available, but there still seems to be a significant need, you know, and I think Holly mentioned this as well, for, you know, education on the revised proposal. You know, there are folks who have been, say, more involved in the standard setting process, and I think there are a lot more now who've been watching it from afar, but as it's getting closer are now really starting to dig in and educate themselves, and I think the board's activities and in helping to further that education will be helpful as you finalize it. You know, in terms of specific issues, there were really only three that we debated. One I think the board is well aware of, which is that the telecom companies continue to raise concerns. Another is the time value element of the proposal. And here, I don't think it's an issue in terms of the concept so much as it is in terms of how to operationalize it in a meaningful and cost-effective way. This tends to affect folks who have long-term service and maintenance contracts. It affects some with long-term construction contracts. Anything that really uses a cost-to-cost or proportional performance-based model today, you know, in contracts that have a duration of longer than a year. So as you move into, you know, specific targeted sort of evaluation, I think that's an area we would recommend you add to your list. And then there was some discussion as well about, you know, as we're thinking about this concept of control on the revenue side, should the board think about, you know, what that means to the cost or inventory accounting side, i.e. when a vendor obtains control, and take it from that point forward. So that's just another topic we debated. You know, the second topic of outreach planning was interesting too. You know, there's been a lot of really excellent outreach so far, and I think the revenue recognition project, I think we all agreed that it's an excellent example of just interactive standard setting, so to speak. You know, a lot of good dialogue along the way. You know, as you move down the final home stretch here, we think it's important that you consider joint, i.e. FASB and IASB, outreach together for key topics. We understand the cost concerns that could be evident at both boards, but there's nothing that substitutes for face-to-face interaction with your constituents and together on the final topics that are critical. We echo what Holly's group said about using field testing in some of the more important areas. Field testing is going to uncover additional issues in both the operationality of the standard as well as interpretive issues that may cause you to question your concepts a bit. And we agree with Holly's group that that is an important tool to use as you move to finalization. You know, in particular, one area where you may consider it would be in the disclosure requirements. There are very detailed and specific disclosure requirements in the ED, and we think you need to fully evaluate the cost and the benefit from both a preparer and a user perspective in finalizing those, and in particular pay attention to interim versus annual requirements. And field testing could be, you know, in a targeted way, sort of a really good way for the boards to inform themselves of both the cost and benefit side of that equation and make those decisions. And I'd say the last major area we talked about, transition continues to be a major theme for both U.S. and European preparers. I think everybody recognizes and understands the need for investors to have information on how to think about a company's revenue, how it will change, and some of the trending there. But I think it gets to some of the points Holly was making around requiring companies to maintain multiple sets of books and the related cost with respect to that. We think, you know, as the boards make some final decisions here, they really should pay some careful attention to how far back is really needed or necessary in order to accomplish the goal of getting the right data to investors. So those were basically our inputs for the team.
Thanks, Jamie. Any comments from other members of the group or questions of Jamie? All right, then we'll turn to Alessandro.
Well, in terms of industries affected, the group discussed a lot about financial services, especially investment banks, and inside that industry on fees, especially performance-related fees, and how those will be addressed. I think those questions are not covered in the financial instrument project, so I think should be addressed. some a little bit more specific guidance on technology companies, because there's a great variation of practice, and it's I know that's hard to forecast all the possible situations, but this would be interesting to have something else. We believe that many companies will move to percentage of completion method with this new approach, comparing with current practice. So it will be also interesting to have a clear view on which sectors will be affected and how this will be implemented. The definition of alternative use as something that come along as hard to understand, at least on the first discussion. Regarding 1B, the group saw no great difficulties in applying the new standards, so and the new concepts. And the cost benefit analysis, some people argue that maybe you're gonna stay where you are, so there is no clear view of the benefits of this new approach. In terms of fair representation, this entitlement to revenue as it has some implication for other standards, because we are actually changing a little bit from the general principles that have been applied in other standards. So it's something that is interesting to be addressed. A point of common concern, so everybody raised that, is the question of impairment and how that relates to the rules of impairment of financial assets. And they related or meaning the same thing. So we diverted a little bit from the topic because we got a great discussion of IFRIC 15 and how that will be applied to the development and real estate business. So my view was a little bit clearer before we started the discussion, so it's not to be blurred after. So I think it's interesting to understand. As I understand, the IFRIC 15 will cease to exist after this new project. So it is interesting for this aspect to be clear in the new standard. So maybe April mentioned to me there are going to be some examples or some things, because this is important in some part of the world. In terms of outreach, people demonstrate some concern and that should be more input from the results of field testing. So it should be interesting to understand a little bit more, if possible. And we actually discussed some ways to give incentives for firms to do some field testing or to be organized by other organizations like EFRAG. But it should be interesting to have some results on field testing. Another question was the percentage of completion method in terms of margin basis or revenue basis. It is interesting to see how people react to different views or to different ways to do that. At least from my example in Brazil, we adopted that. We have percentage of completion in Brazil. There are a lot of discussion about the technical details on how to implement that. And also not the revenues not coming from customers, because the standard is not on revenues, it's revenue from customers. So it should be interesting to understand how that relates to the other sources of revenues. Regarding 2C, the final one is, I think the main point here is to understand from the outreach if the principles are clear enough to allow for efficient application. And this, the target outreach should not be done at the expense of a broader outreach. So, because we believe that some of the answers to the first topic will actually be easier to be answered, it will be easier to be given if we reach the broader audience as possible in terms of our outreach. So I think it's the summary of the discussion. If anybody wants to jump in, so it's hard to summarize. So many.
Any comments or questions? All right, let's move on to the fourth group. John.
Thank you. On the first question, I think we thought that the board and the staff have done an excellent job in identifying all the affected industries. The only, I think, point that we would add to what had been in the presentation was that China expressed some specific concerns about how operational the move from percentage completion to continuous transfer would be for their construction industry. And I think that's a broader point than just the IFRIC 15 point that you see elsewhere in Asia and South America. All the other issues we discussed under that heading rapidly turned out, I think, to have wider application than a particular jurisdiction or a particular industry. On outreach, we thought the plans looked pretty comprehensive, and so what we focused on was really a list of specific issues that would need to be addressed in that outreach. Time value of money was the first one that we picked up, but here I think we particularly focused on the question of the mirror imaging of prepayment of as opposed to, you know, with the deferred payment, and in particular how you distinguish between a prepayment from something that is economically just a deposit in order to secure a future supply. That was particularly the case, I think, in South Asia and also in other parts of East Asia as well, where the economics of the deal were such that you were making a very substantial deposit purely just to get the right to future supply, effectively, rather than it being treated as payment in advance. You didn't get any adjustment to sales price as a result. A second point, again, picking up, I think what Alessandro said was alternative use is a new concept. I think the questions in the earlier session that the shipping example triggered is an indication that's not one that people feel immediately comfortable with, and that may be one that needs some education element to it through the outreach program. We also talked a bit about the switch from risk and rewards to the control model. Yuting said yesterday, that made the point yesterday, that that actually creates a clash with the current conceptual framework. So there's a separate thing to note there. And we also noted that the ED now includes risk and rewards as an indicator of control, and said there's considerable potentially for confusion there, where people regard as alternative models, and in fact one model now appears to be an indicator within the other model, and there might be a better way of bringing in the risk and rewards piece there if it needs to come in. Then had a comment that the phrase reasonably assured sounds very close to the auditing standards concept of reasonable assurance, which is, again, in auditing standards, described as a very high level of assurance. And we weren't sure that was what was intended by it in the context of the revenue exposure draft. So again, I think during the outreach, a need to make sure that you gain an understanding of what people actually think the phrase means, and actually how it will get translated into other languages as well. There was a reference, I think, to the Korean exercise of the number of different terms in IFRS that relate in some way or other to probability, and how English seems to have far more than Korean does. And I think also a specific concern about how the concept of reasonably assured interacts with the measurement criteria for contingent consideration, where you could argue that both probability weighted or most likely, and not necessarily, neither of those might necessarily be reasonably assured, and what you do in that situation. We talked a bit about disclosure. Clearly, there's a lot of disclosure in the exposure draft, in the proposals, and a need to do a proper cost-benefit analysis on those. But a particular concern raised was the requirement for disclosures of future estimates of revenue on long-term contracts. Questions about how practical that is, how commercially sensitive it might be, and indeed whether, in fact, we're straying into disclosures about future performance rather than past performance, and therefore disclosures that might be more appropriate to an MD&A type of discussion than a financial statements. We also picked up on Holly's point around application guidance. I think clearly there's going to be a huge demand for application guidance, and there's a need therefore to balance that, and perhaps part of the outreach exercise is to judge how much is actually going to be needed. And then we picked up a couple of other issues straying slightly off the topic, but we did comment on the fact that there are now several definitions of control across standards, and that's perhaps an issue that needs to go on to the cross-cutting issues analysis that we've talked about at previous meetings. And there were concerns about possible inconsistencies of where we understand the lessor accounting model might be going and the revenue recognition standard and how that gets addressed.
Thanks, John. Any questions or comments regarding John's report? All right. I guess I'll open it up at that point. Having heard the four report backs, any additional comments that members wish to make, or board members having heard the reactions? I sense we're all anxious for lunch. Christoph.
Just a quick comment, because a couple of report backs talked about additional detailed guidance on examples. Coming from the software industry, which may be the industry that, at least under US GAAP currently, has the most detailed revenue recognition guidance, I can only caution people. The line between examples and a rule-based system is a very tiny line and very easy to get from one side to the other. So I know there is some good reason to have examples, but we shouldn't overdo it unless we want to move to a rule-based system.
Holly?
Thank you. I agree with that entirely. I would also say that there's a concern about the acceptance of the standard, and the question becomes, is it because companies just don't want to change, or maybe investors don't want to change their models, or is it more that that users and preparers are fearful of, you know, what are we really talking about? And so to the extent that the ISB is proactive in minimizing that fear, because the lack of consequence or not knowing what the consequence is, I think the more accepting the community will be of the standard. So.
All right. Well, the common theme that I sense from the comments, first of all, I draw a strong inference that from the fact that the groups did not seem to identify a lot of specific points of disagreement with the basic model. And so I'm taking from that that it's more an exercise of making sure that we understand the proposition in its current formulation. Some have said implementation guidance, others have talked about education, but I think all of the groups sort of, I've sensed we're saying, you know, we need to make sure that that people understand whether these principles and the guidance that's there is sufficient to produce what are felt to be appropriate results in a variety of contexts. People, I think, seem to feel that most of the areas and industries that are particularly affected by certain aspects have already had a lot of outreach. A couple of other suggestions might add to the list, but a sense that these proposals will affect just about everybody, and therefore, in addition to those specific targeted areas of particular concern, we ought not to assume that everyone else has properly analyzed, done their own modeling and field testing, and are all happy campers. That would be nice, but I would not operate on that assumption. This is suggesting that perhaps some joint outreach with the FASB and the ISB, and I think there are ways that that's been done in the past of sharing, and certainly I would support the proposition that there's no substitute for hearing things firsthand. But on the other hand, you got to be realistic. You can't globetrot and spread yourself too thin would be a risk and pose its own problems. But other than that, I thought there were a number of specific points that I'm sure the staff and board members will take on board. And the hope is that this can be done. Field testing or one form or another, I think, is widely supported. But realistically, you know, no amount of urging on the part of the boards will produce field testing. I think the onus is on us and others to get out there and say, you know, this is your opportunity. There is a cost to it, but it's worth the effort. Far better to do it now than to wait until the standard's been finalized and then to discover that there were aspects that you didn't understand or whatever. So thank you for the report backs. Before we break for lunch, I had forgotten that we promised Patrice a few minutes to, having reflected on yesterday's breakouts, to make a few observations before lunch.
Thank you, Paul. Yes, I would give you some global sum up of what has been exchanged yesterday on the breakout sessions. That would be should be very quick because we've got a very great level of consensus and convergence on the answers we've brought on the question raised. It's the reason why, with the help of John, I prepare a mix-up of different contribution, question by question. regarding the question one, I recall it was improving and structuring relation with stakeholders, internal stakeholders, and do we include the monitoring board as an internal stakeholder? On the second part of the question, it was clear not to engage directly with the monitoring board because first we respect hierarchy, and if we have some messages to be passed, we prefer to pass through the trustees or structure. Another reason is the presence of Makoto, who assures a relay towards the monitoring board of our exchange. That means it seems for us it's enough. Coming back to the first part, improving and structuring, on our part, to communicate clear and constructive message when we give advice, even if we have not to look for an absolute consensus of everything, we must try to give some clear conclusions of on the different subjects we have been asked for. Obviously, the preferred channel to communicate with trustees is Paul's report and communication to them, and we don't see to change this. A room for improvement still, from ISB to the council in being more specific when they are asking council advice, or from the council to internal stakeholder in being more proactive. And Mark quoted the comments made by Hans on impairment. Maybe Mark, you could precise later on what was exactly the reaction we could have after my speech, if you okay. And that is for the question one. For the question two, we thought it was a very big question, but the comments have been very short. It was related to external stakeholder. And I must say that few suggestions on this for improvement on that area. We thought that we didn't feel any specific need to put more notes on in a different way what is done now. But we have some asking about the way that we could try to be more active on our website. I must say, I want to say, to be more present. That means it seems to us that the comments which are made on around the Advisory Council could be more implemented, more precise, more contents what we do, and okay, to be sure that the people wants to plug in the site know us perfectly. Another point is it has been quoted also the fact that maybe we inform the organization we are representing, but maybe we could need to reach out some groups which are not represented, try to identify and giving some information, maybe on a very educational way, that means prepare slides or a PowerPoint presentation, a summing up of what has been done, which could be sent through mail or through more specific communication. And it has been recalled that to get in touch with this kind of groups, we could have a sort of brief updates of our meeting on our activities, including our profiles or the way we are working. On the question three, it was about ambassadorial role, and a lot of us have found that the term was not really appropriate. Even if we are doing, to a certain extent, the role of an ambassador when we inform our country, that means ISB organization, of what happens outside, that means the organization we represent. In the other way, we cannot be taken as an ambassador because it's difficult to match our activity of being critics, constructive critics, but to represent ISB as an ambassador would mean to defend and whatever we are thinking. The position of ISB, it seems to us that it's a bit too difficult. It seems also that regarding the term of ambassador, I remember that Judith challenged me in trying to find in French, but I try in English, another term that ambassador, because obviously we did not fit with that term. Maybe a great witness or something like that to be more representative of what we feel. Having said that, we have no obstacle to be as a witness in our different part we are to explain ISB working, try to also stress the fact that a great amount of activity and to be, as I said, a witness of these activities more than an ambassador. I think it's the global view we have expressed, and I must say that I've been very, it was a great level of convergence. Mark, if you want just to comment my point, to be sure that I'm understood.
Well, the point on impairment was just an example when we were talking about the expectations of the board from the council. What are the issues that advice is being sought? And Hans was yesterday expressing, when he was giving his update, he was expressing some frustration. And so the question, and there was comment from Stephen Elk, for example, actually there wasn't that much comment from the council. So there seems to be, you know, perhaps some expectation gaps here and there as to, you know, where advice is being sought on. And so if there is an area where the board would really like to have some input, perhaps be a bit more explicit on it. On the other hand, for us to be a bit more proactive in offering that advice. That was the example.
Thanks very much, because it seems that illustrates the fact that to be more reactive, we could be more reactive and on a specific question. That means that could be taken as an agenda of the council. If I missed some points, please do not hesitate, for the benefit of the record, to complete my speech.
Well, thank you for that, Patrice. It's important that we capture the main points, and we'll bring them forward in terms of things that we can do and some that we might want to come back and discuss. Others, I think staff can just begin to act on. Before we close, Jim, you had your card up earlier, and I think I missed it. Are you content? Not trying to rewind the tape, but...
Well, very quickly, Paul, thank you for your summary of what you felt we discussed around the previous session on the revenue recognition. I think I heard you say that you concluded that the council was not unhappy with the direction of the project. That wasn't what we had been asked, and wasn't what I thought we'd discussed, and I would hope that you wouldn't necessarily take that comment forward in your report to the trustees.
Fair enough. I guess, Jim, my reaction is if people had significant concerns, I would be astonished if you would leave this meeting not having expressed them. But I will restrict my remarks to the trustees to the point we were discussing. So I guess I meant it in a way as a prod to you. If there are fundamental issues and points of disagreement, for goodness sake, don't be silent. So find a channel to get that. I'm not trying to provoke you because I'm not hearing them. But quite right. Steve, you wanted to come in at the same point? Or?
No, it's not. I just wanted to thank you for the input on revenue recognition. I thought there were some useful points made, and we've got the team here that are furiously taking notes as to what you're saying. I mean, obviously, some of the points were quite technical about the proposals, and they've taken notes on that, I'm sure. I felt some of those perhaps were more of an education issue, but that's also important information for us. There were just two points that I wanted to mention, though. One is on joint outreach. Yes, the outreach will be done on a joint basis wherever that is possible. Obviously, it's not always possible, but that is clearly the better way for us to do it. And if it's not possible, then the results of that outreach will be shared. I haven't seen the outreach plan yet for the re-exposure, but I'm sure it already exists and is being actively discussed at the moment. The other one was the application guidance, and Christoph mentioned it, and also John. And this is not just an issue for revenue recognition, but right across standard setting. I think Christoph's caution is very well, very important. But I have to say that I was in Canada recently at a conference in Toronto. Paul was on a panel, and there were others there discussing revenue recognition. And there was a pretty strong call there for much more detail in terms of application guidance. It's not going to work unless you lay out precisely what we do for every single transaction. Now, that's probably an exaggeration, but done for effect. And there are quite different opinions about the need for application guidance in this area. So it is an issue that we're very well aware of. I don't know whether that might be something for this council to discuss more in the future, but it is a particular issue, and obviously especially for revenue recognition. I think we've got the approach about right, but not everybody would agree with that.
Holly.
Just because you asked, there are two areas that I think there could be potential unintended consequences. One was brought up by Andrew earlier related to the accounting for the failed performance obligations when the contract was less than 1 year. Potentially that would create an incentive to write 364-day renewable contracts and not achieve the objective of getting those expected losses recognized in a timely fashion. So I think that is something to consider, and maybe in outreach you could get a better idea of what industries in particular might manifest in that outcome. The other one is in the accounting for contract acquisition costs, and in our conversation it was shared that the treatment of being able to capitalize those costs was to be consistent with other standards that are being debated or have been issued. But again, this could result in unintended consequences in that companies could restructure potentially their compensation of employees or the way that they engage in client retention. And we know that that discretion that's available in those capitalized costs could play a role in the quality of financial reporting. And there's a vast amount of academic literature that supports this notion that a lot of subjectivity in the capitalization of costs can, in fact, reduce the usefulness of accounting information going forward. So.
All right. I think we are ready to adjourn. We're right on schedule. So if you would, please, we should be back here at 1:30. Thank you.